The Pat Kenny Show
with MasterCard. Share in extraordinary experiences all over the world with priceless cities at priceless.com.
This is News Talk.
What?
Okay, I'm sending this message to the world to recognize that we are in suffer. We are sending this message straight from Tripoli Absalom camp. We are 500 people. There are 500 people. 120 are from them, women and 20 are children. We are suffering too much. We have no water, no food. The guard has left us because of the war. Please help us.
Hello, we are under infective war. We don't have food for water to drink. Our children are crying for food that we cannot provide, so we are asking for help. Please help.
Please, we need freedom. We need to get out from the war. We need to get out of Libya. Libya, please, please help, help.
That's a selection of recordings from those migrant detention centres in Libya, the voices of people caught up in a dark, lawless world of torture and people traffickers that has grown up in the aftermath of the Libyan civil war. The recordings that we just heard were sent to my next guest, Sally Hayden. Sally is an Irish freelance journalist whose work on some of the world's darkest stories recently saw her named by Forbes in the highly regarded annual 30 Under 30 list. Sally, good morning and welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, first of all, these detention centres in Libya, I mean, we were following the saga of the Mediterranean migration for a long time. There was a Coast Guard that was utterly porous, and then Europe started to pay the Coast Guard to take people back or prevent them moving on. But it was, even with the Coast Guard, you'd imagine the state agency should be regulated, but that appeared to be lawless. What is the situation now?
Well, I'm sure that a lot of your listeners have heard the EU say things like the migration crisis is over, which they recently announced, and talking about how new arrivals are dropping and people aren't coming to Europe anymore. And they kind of present this as something that's saved lives. And in actual fact, what's happening is that people, basically, as you said, the Coast Guard are being paid to force refugees and migrants back to Libya. And they're being locked up indefinitely in detention centres where they're being abused, being starved, tortured in some cases. And yeah, people are dying in the detention centres.
Now, who is running these detention centres, and are they, if you like, sanctioned by the EU? Is the EU paying money for the maintenance of these centres?
So the detention centres are run by the Libyan authorities, the ministry called the Department for Combating Illegal Migration. And the EU kind of does this sneaky thing where they aren't funding them directly, but they're funding the UN. And what they say is we're working to improve the conditions. And they also repeatedly say that they're against the detention centres existing. But what they're funding is people being returned to the detention centres with the knowledge that they're going to be locked up in them. And I know in your intro, you said hundreds of people. It's actually at the moment at least 5,700 people, according to the UN, are locked up in them. And many more have been essentially sold back to smugglers or forced out on the streets, or other things have happened to them as a result of being sent back to Libya and put in these centres.
Where are these people originally from, Sally? I mean, are they Libyans, you know, fleeing from the aftermath of war, or are they people from further south or further east or west?
The people that I'm in touch with, most of them are what would generally be classified as refugees. Like, they've fled either Eritrea or Ethiopia or Somalia, Sudan as well, Darfur. And so they're from countries or conflicts or dictatorships that they can't go back to. And that's why they get trapped in these detention centres, because there are other people from, say, Nigeria or the Gambia who kind of try to get to Europe, but then when it doesn't work out, might say, well, I'll go back home again. But the people who are actually locked up there for, you know, some of them more than a year, are people who actually can't go home.
You're in touch with some of these refugees, those in prison, in these detention centres, effectively, by WhatsApp. So, you know, they're clearly not exactly like prisons as we understand it.
I mean, I think they're worse than prisons as we understand it. And I don't think that people should conflate the idea of having a phone with the conditions being good. For people, the phone is a lifeline because they use it to, you know, some of them haven't been fed in months and they're using one hidden phone among maybe 100 people to call their families, to get the families to send money so that they can buy food. Or if they're sold back to smugglers, like pay a ransom. You know, the phone is a lifeline. So that's why they have them. But the guards also regularly search for phones and confiscate them. And I've actually heard, you know, they don't want information getting out from the centres. I've heard that people have been targeted under suspicion of speaking to me after I publish reports.
Why do they maintain these people in the detention centres? I mean, what's in it for them? You mentioned some people are sold to traffickers, and obviously there's money there. But running these centres would appear to be an expense that Libya could do without.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Libyans regard refugees and migrants as being illegal. So they do arrest them and they do lock them up. Having said that, a lot of people do go missing from the centres, and I have evidence, for example, in one detention centre of around 70 people being sold straight back to smugglers after about a week in a detention centre. That happened in January. So,
Is there a racial element to this, Sally? I mean, we always think, you know, in the Western developed world about black and white, but in North Africa you're talking about Arabic populations. And then you get people coming from the south, from, as you mentioned, Ethiopia, Somalia and so on, who would be more classically African than Arabic. Is that an element of the persecution of these people?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there are obviously good Libyans who are trying to do the best. But unfortunately, the country is being controlled by militias, and the militias seem to regard refugees and migrants as a way to make money and not necessarily see them as people. And the scale of the abuse that I've heard of, you know, they aren't treating them as people. They can't see them as people. So it's not fair to say it's all Libyans, but I do think the people in charge seem to be acting
and,
like
and
that.
And what about NGOs? How much access have they got to these detention centres?
I think a lot of the time they have limited access. So they might, like, you know, be banned for a certain period of time if they speak out about something that's happening. And also one of the big problems is that some of the NGOs that provide medical care don't actually enter into the cells where people are being treated. So they might be selecting, the guards might select maybe like 5 or 10 people who can come out and see the medical NGOs, and everybody else is just kept inside.
People are texting me, what can we do to help? I mean, this is not necessarily about money. It's what, about political pressure?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a journalist, so I'm kind of loath to tell people exactly what they should be doing. But for me, the really shocking thing is that people didn't seem aware that this is happening. And, you know, even the fact that I, you know, when I got a message from refugees, I was like, what? Like, you can't, this can't be real. They were saying they had been abandoned. They were in the middle of a war. They hadn't had food in days. And, you know, the messages that you heard, like screaming women, screaming children, and the fact that people don't know about it, the fact that like people are getting targeted for sending messages out, and all that these refugees that I'm speaking to want is they want people to know what's happening. Yeah, they want political pressure. They want people to be aware that Europe is responsible for this and that Europe is causing suffering, extreme suffering and death, including to women and children.
Well, political pressure is obviously what needs to be brought to bear. All the political energies in Europe being consumed by Brexit at the moment. The Libyan crisis has gone off the radar. The migrant crisis has gone off the radar. You're just giving us a timely reminder that they literally have not gone away. They are there, but they are in detention. Sally, just about yourself, that award from Forbes, 30 Under 30, being nominated in that very impressive category, does it make a difference to your work?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, because I'm freelance, I'm working on my own a lot of the time and without a lot of support. I mean, getting something like that, it's just a reminder, really, that people are paying attention, and that's really lovely. Because it can be quite isolating, especially when you feel like some people don't care. You know, on a story like this, you're just like, nobody cares, and that's really hard.
But you've found yourself in some of the most dangerous spots around the place reporting. You are freelance, so you depend on contracts to keep bread on the table.
Yeah, exactly. And I do get support from, like, I get grants and things like that as well.
Okay, well, it's fantastic work you're doing and well acknowledged by Forbes. Sally, thank you very much for joining us. Sally Hayden is an Irish freelance journalist who works on some of the more dark stories that populate our globe. Sally, thanks a million for joining us.